go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running for this fourth day of May, 2018. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. And that, of course, is where you go if you would like to be a part of the madcap, rollicking, merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. I'm on my way there now, even as we speak. And if you pop in there, you will be met by the likes of Anatole and Mancave and Scott and more, who will probably be wandering by in fairly short order. I have an unanticipated, a couple of unanticipated program notes to begin the evening. One, this program will only be 2 hours this evening. And being as how it's Friday on the front porch, that means we'll get the front porch cranked up perhaps a little bit earlier than we ordinarily do, assuming people want to do that, because I'll be shutting things down and turning things around and retooling and rebooting and all that shortly after 8 o'clock, because I'll be filling in for our good friend Mike Malloy at 9 p.m. From 9 to 11 over on Progressive Voices. The second announcement is has to do with next week's schedule. It is entirely likely that there will be no program on Thursday and Friday of next week. And that is because the last of a generation, one of my aunts has passed away in her 90s, and she led a rich, full, varied, and exciting life, and it has come to an end. And I loved her, and she was special to me, and so her viewing and funeral are slated for next Friday and Saturday, and I'll have to drive over there because it's about a 9-10 hour drive. I'll have to drive over. Agnes and I will on Thursday and be back on Sunday. So that's why there will be no programs on Thursday and Friday of next week. So we've got that little bit of housekeeping out of the way. Thanks go out here at the beginning of the program. Thanks go out to our subscribers. Thanks very kindly to Paul for being a partial sponsor of the program month in and month out. Thank you as well to Catherine in California. And that's our subscribers for the fourth day of the month. If you'd like to become a subscriber, we certainly could. The community could use your help. Just go over to HeadOn.live and either at Patreon or at PayPal, click the buttons and sign up. If you sign up at Patreon, your first subscription contribution will not come out until June the 1st. If you subscribe over at PayPal, it will come out on the day you sign up. So, for instance, if you were to become a subscriber today, it would come out today and the 4th of the month thereafter. And frankly, the more subscribers we have, the less of this fundraising talk there is. And that would make me intensely happy if you get the idea. Because I don't like spending a lot of program time doing this. It's the end of the week. We need to raise $360 this evening in order to finish the week. 10 at 36, 36 at 10, 1 at 360, 2 at 180, 4 at 90, 8 at 45, 16 at 2250, 32 at 11 and a quarter. Now, 32 new subscribers at 11 and a quarter would set a record. But I understand. Still, it would be great to finish the first week of May not in the hole. Thank you all in advance, very kindly indeed. So that's where we... I misspoke. We need to raise $355. Thank you very kindly to Larry for chipping in and helping out this evening. Let's see. It's, like I said, it's Friday on the front porch, which means in short order we will be engaging in the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable. Oh, did I do the Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid part? Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be firing up the Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, and if you would like to participate, then on Skype, send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, one word, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, and Sparky will show you the breadcrumb trail to get into the room, and you'll be part of a rather unique little conversation that takes place here at the end of every week, Friday on the Front Porch, an Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable Conversation. Which, if you recall the conversation with Matt and Humboldt last night, last week's was a Jim Dandy. And I have no reason to think that this week's will not also be a Jim Dandy. So, you know, we should probably... depending on getting the go-ahead from Sparky on it, I'd like for us to have an opportunity to have a good, rousing conversation with plenty of time for everybody to get their thoughts in. So maybe we'll start it here in about 20 minutes, take a little break, and get the conversation going. And, you know, One of the most enjoyable parts of Friday on the Front Porch is that folks bring to the conversation whatever it is that's on their mind, and it's not necessarily a reflection of what's on mind, mind, or what passes for right my mind. Where to begin? Well. We can always begin with the, oh God, I hate going into the Trump swamp so early. But given what I was saying last night about the fact that the news cycle is now a steady flood stage torrent, where the most you can hope to do is just sort of snatch out little nit bits and pieces. Well, you got to go with what's on the top of the flotsam and jetsam. Big day in Texas, because of course the National Rifle Association America's wealthiest, most powerful domestic terror organization. Is having their conclave. And both Geezer Disgustus and Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek went down to bow and scrape and humble themselves before a bunch of gun-humping maniacs. It was another example of not a lot of sanity on display from the Tangerine Tiberius. Oh, I just got a piece of news in from Darlene in Connecticut. Darlene says, in order to knock out $200 of this evening's deficit, she's putting a $100 challenge on the table. Please don't let this thing go by. It's your chance to double your money this evening. And I will retroactively apply that to Larry getting us started so that, it seems only fair, so that, you know, your 5 becomes 10, your 10, 20, your 20, 40, up to a total of $100. Okay? And that would take a big bite out of the deficit. So thank you, Darlene, and thanks to everybody for chiming in and chipping in as we go forward on that challenge. Thank you very much indeed. As I noted, they gathered to hear the musings, or as I prefer to think of it, the ravings and rantings of our not particularly mentally healthy president today in Texas. It was, suffice to say, bizarre. But, you know, even something like the word bizarre doesn't get the job done anymore when you're talking about the Nectarine Nero. Because he doesn't know how to not be bizarre. But this is a good indication or a good example. So, you know, it's the NRA, and you would expect him to talk about how fabulous and wonderful guns are, even though I wouldn't know what to do with one if you handed me one loaded. Although he did brag it once. And you know, hey, this is just, I mean, they're really a match made in hell, because this is a guy who once boasted that he could murder people in the middle of Fifth Avenue in New York City, and he would not lose a single voter. So a guy who fantasizes about doing gun violence is going to talk to, or went to talk to, a whole bunch of people who inherently fantasize about doing gun violence. We've had that conversation. You do not purchase and own a weapon without at least contemplating the necessity of using it. So he's there to talk to the gun humpers, and what does he talk about? Iran and John Kerry. I don't know about you, but that strikes me as bizarre. You tell me.
Yes to America, and we have the former administration. As represented by John Kerry. Not the best negotiator we've ever seen. He never walked away from the table. Except to be in that bicycle race where he fell and broke his leg. That's it.
Ha! Did you hear him laughing when he got to the part where John Kerry broke his leg? Ho, ho, ho. Boy, that was almost as funny as if somebody would have shot John Kerry. Dang, I tell you what, that president, he brings the magic. He's still got the magic, don't he? Oh, he does, he does, he does. Merciful sake. Oh, what a knee slapper that is, that part where he fell and broke his leg. I don't care who you are, that's funny. Yeah, let's listen to them. Let's listen to them laugh. These members of America's wealthiest, most powerful domestic terror organization. Let's hear them laugh again.
Except to be in that bicycle race where he fell and broke his leg. That's it. That was the only time.
Apparently, they borrowed the reverb from Rafael Eduardo Cruz, father of Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. That's a heck of an audio echo pushback there.
I said, don't tell him you broke your leg. Just stay inside. Say you don't want to negotiate. You'll make a much better deal. But he broke his leg. And I learned from that. At 73 years old, you never go into a bicycle race, okay? Just that.
Yeah, I don't think there's any risk of Donald Trump being healthy enough to participate in any bicycle races. At this point in time, I wouldn't trust him at the steering wheel of a golf cart. You'll notice somebody else drives him when he's out on the links. You know, on our nickel, weekend after weekend after weekend after weekend. And what's this I told him business? Since when was Donald Trump giving advice to John Kerry? I mean, I told him, does that mean he tweeted at him one day? Because you can almost imagine John Kerry sitting there and say, I'd better open my Twitter so I can see what Donald Trump has told me to do with the Iranian negotiations. That, of course, is my terrible John Kerry impression. But that's what he went to Texas to tell the gun humpers. I guess so, because it really he couldn't talk a whole lot about the stuff that's actually consuming the attention of the country. The best he could do was when getting out of town today. He looked at a camera and said, Rudy Giuliani's only been on the job a couple of days. He'll get his facts straight. Because, of course, Rudy Giuliani, doing his best Matlock impression, not really, somehow or another managed to throw into complete chaos, as if chaos was not already there, everything that is presently known or suspected about the Mueller investigation, and in particular the payments to Stormy Daniels, who once spanked the naked bare bottom of the president with a rolled up copy of Forbes, and now my mind is hurting again. Yeah. He declared that Michael Cohen made the payment from a retainer, and that there were no campaign and funds involved. He paid it out of his own funds, and then I think the words or something got into the conversation. It was a real dandy. A I was about to say, it's going to be a long, hot summer. But, you know what? No. Temperature really has nothing to do with it. It's going to be a bizarre summer. Now, as far as the NRA is concerned, however, I don't know if Dana Lush and Greg Stinkfield, I'm sure there were some remarks from Wayne the Peter, maybe Ted Nugent, whatever. There's nobody in office right now. Well, there are some, but no one at the head of government that he can threaten to murder as he did with Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and got away with it. Of course, he once said that, well, never mind. Not sure if Coleon Noir has spoken to the faithful yet. But Vox had an interesting story of late. The story of a pregnant woman with dark skin who's doing 2 years at the Huron Valley Correctional Facility in Michigan. She's there having been convicted of assault and felony firearm-related charges. She's also pregnant. Why would you expect the NRA to chime in? Well, because Sawatu Salama Ra had a run-in with someone named Chanel Harvey. She thought she was she and her family were about to be run over by Chanel Harvey. Ms. Ross said, Harvey was literally going back and forth to this car, putting it in reverse and fixing herself to come at us again and go after my mother, who was also standing very close to me and wasn't able to run. That's the point in time when Sawatu Salama Ra took an unloaded handgun and pointed it at Chanel Harvey. I should note that she did not pull the trigger. I should probably note that there were no bullets in the gun at all. But Chanel Harvey snapped a picture and ran off to the police station and reported how terrified she was. The police didn't do much investigating. They looked at the picture and went and arrested the pregnant black woman. Patrice Cullors, a co-founder of Black Lives Matter, said Suatu should be home getting ready to deliver her baby and being with her family. Instead, she's suffering and isolated, being punished for protecting herself, her child, and her mother. This is a shameful, shameful reality, and it's clear that we need to challenge a criminal justice system that would try a pregnant black woman for upholding stand your ground laws and her Second Amendment rights in a state that allows that. Her lawyer, Victoria Burton Harris, chimed in as well. She said, the case was simple. A black woman, a mother, a daughter, an activist was afraid, and it didn't matter. Her fear wasn't significant enough for a jury of her peers to believe it. We'll never know what more she needed to endure to justify her fear. She stood her ground and is now serving a mandatory 2-year prison term. It's a hard pill to swallow. Meanwhile, the judge was not much interested in that, what's the line? The quality of mercy is not strained, it falleth as the gentle rain of heaven upon the just and the unjust. Now, to be fair, Dana Lush, who might get things wrong, you know, she does that a lot. She said she talked about it on NRA TV, the case. But nobody's out there hollering justice for Suatu. Mm-mm, no. And as I said, the judge wasn't much interested in the quality of mercy, because he refused to postpone the sentencing on a case that was pretty clearly sketchy. He wouldn't postpone the case pending the delivery of her baby. And he would not postpone sentencing pending the appeal that has been filed. Which raises the larger question. That is addressed somewhat by her lawyer. Her fear wasn't significant enough for a jury of her peers to believe it. We'll never know what more she needed to endure to justify her fear. You know, if Chanel Harvey had gone ahead and run over her and her mother and her child and the baby in her, well, we might have some sustained outrage in this country about not about the child or the mother or Suatu Ra, but there might at least be some sustained outrage in this country about the poor, precious little fetus whose life was so cruelly ended by a woman with an automobile. But she wasn't willing to die. She was trying not to die. And consequently, she's doing 2 years in the joint for trying to protect herself from a woman who was demonstrating she was willing to kill three people and a fetus. The judge, who was short on mercy that day, probably might have had more mercy if the victim had been white. And by mercy, I mean Suatu Ra. She was a victim, not a perp. And it's all just. It's all just a blur of white noise in regard to the question of justice, because, well, not a whole lot of caring going on out there. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, these people are horrid. Fucking Republicans always seem to find joy and humor in the pain of others. Why these people hate Barack Obama is beyond me. Wasn't he the one that signed into law their right to tote their pacifiers into national parks? His only gun legislation? That is correct, sir. You are absolutely correct. Ron adds, come on, sweet baby Jeebus, don't you know by now black folks don't have Second Amendment rights? A little-known clause says the right to keep and bear arms except if you're black. I know, Philando Castile comes to mind. And if there's an at-least moment, the at-least moment is at least Suatu Ra is still alive. But I guess the Rudy Giuliani story is really the one that's dominating the headlines these days. I mean, when the President of the United States offers by way of an excuse the statement that, well, he's only been on the job for one day, give him a break. He'll get the facts straight. Yeah, I kind of doubt it. Because when everything you're saying is lies, there are no, as a, you know, just as a matter of reason and logic and common sense, there are no facts. Or they are not in possession of any of them. What a world, what a world, what a world, what a world. I know. Note coming in from Keith. Subject line, Merca. I had to take our four-legged child to the vet today, and I saw something for the first time. I saw a younger guy wearing a cap that actually said, Merca. After listening, I found out that he is an active-duty Marine. I know that you joke about Merca a lot, but I see that the dumbing down of America is in full force. Oh, well, you know, when I spell it M-U-R-K-K-K-A. Just in case anybody... just in case anybody wants to, you know, use it in written communications. In regard to Sawatu Ra, Larry says, if Michael Avenatti wants to gain full street cred, he ought to go on public TV to offer his consultation and assistance in her case. Someone should bring it to his attention in regards to this young woman. I don't know that she necessarily needs another lawyer. She needed a better judge and a better jury. She needed a jury that actually gave a damn about a pregnant black woman at risk of having her mother herself, her born child and her fetus run down. She needed never to have been charged. Brother Deacon Ace is saying, well, there you go again, Bob, taking the side of thugs with guns while they goon on the poor, upright white people. Merca. The greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, in the universe, forever, under God. Amen. And then there was the open mic moment that happened as Trump blathered along on the tarmac today. Someone, a female, presumably, from the media, as Trump babbled, declared, this is crazy, because he was the stream of unconsciousing again, and talking about Korea, particularly North Korea.
Tell you, at some point into the future, I would like to save the money. You know, we have 32,000 troops there. But I think a lot of great things will happen. But troops are not on the table.
It's not really apparent, and I don't want to blow your speakers up, but you can hear someone whispering, this is crazy. And he's talking about troop levels in South Korea and and how it costs too much. He's one of those guys who knows the price of everything and the value of nothing.
Save the money. You know, we have 32,000 troops there.
This is crazy.
But I think a lot of great things will happen. But
did you hear it? It's right there. This is crazy. And it, you know, if I had the big time skills, I'd try to clean it up and pull that piece of audio out so that we could just play that. This is crazy. Every time he speaks. And we don't exactly know what it is that the speaker thought was crazy, but Jesus, how do you narrow it down? Oh, by the way, I'm happy to announce that we've now knocked out $65 of Darlene's challenge. Thank you, Charlene, in Rhode Island. Thank you very, very kindly. New England stepping up. So that's $35 to go to finish the challenge, and then after that, that would leave $160 to go. So $35 to finish Charlene's challenge, and then $160 to go to finish the week. So let's take a break. When you get a news story like today, and this is just the perfect bumper. We're going to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable if you want to be part of the conversation. Like I've said before, if you're not already in contact with Sparky Dunk on Skype, SparkyDunc, one word, SparkyDunc, one word, on Skype, then connect now and join in the conversation, because it's quite often a dandy. Yeah, this is the perfect bumper. It's a long-distance dedication going out to Rudy Giuliani from all of us here at the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be right back.
I just don't have the good
like I said, the perfect bumper. Very, yes, absolutely. The perfect musical interlude. The Clash from the seminal London Calling from God Almighty. Let's do the math on that one real quick. 21. From 39 years ago. God. London Calling. Rudy Can't Fail. And it was really kind of a double bonus because I had forgotten. I was just going with the Rudy aspect of it for Rudy Giuliani. But there's another moment. Listen early on. There's a reference. Just going to restart it for a second. Dancing.
Sing, Michael, sing!
Did you get that? That's beautiful. That's a little gift from the goddess of irony. Sing, Michael, sing. Yes, Michael, do sing. Please sing. And I've got a feeling you're going to start fairly soon. Yes. Oh, by the way, did you know, and it's kind of strange, but did you know that, so he's Michael Cohen, he's the big shot, he's the fixer. You know where he went to law school? He went to law school at the worst law school in the entire United States, the law school that is so uncompetitive that if you've got a pulse you can, and you can pay the $50,000 or so bucks a year, you get in the Cooley Law School up in Michigan.
I've only got the best lawyers from the best schools. I went to Wharton, you know. And I graduated summa cum laude. But it was secret summa cum laude, and they weren't allowed to tell anybody.
And but his hotshot lawyer, and probably not at the top of his class, at a pretty sketchy law school. Just thought you might like to know that. Thanks going out. Thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly indeed to Jerry for jumping in. That took the challenge took Darlene's challenge down to only $15. And Philip jumped in with 10, so we got $5 remaining on Darlene's challenge and 165 to go. It's a big help, Philip. A big help indeed. Thank you so very much. Yes, Jason, worse than Liberty University Law School. You can, as the saying goes, look it up. The Cooley Law School is literally the worst law school in the country. Even worse, yes, Matt in San Francisco, than Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe. That's right, Scott and Punky pointing out, you mean the closed cover before striking Academy of VCR Repair and Law in Norwalk, Connecticut? Do not mail matches? Even worse than that. Draw the pirate. Draw Spunky. The turtle, Spunky. Yeah. So, it all kind of adds up. Well, hey, enough babbling by me. Let's get over and get on the Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable going. Hey, Sparky.
Can you hear me?
I hear you great.
Okay, I'm going to my new position here just shortly.
How's the knee?
Well, I'm running around in my dad's old mobility chair.
that doesn't sound good.
Well, it's just better than playing Chester, you know, limping around. I can walk from point A to point B, but it takes me a while to get there.
Understood. So it's a choice, not a necessity, is what you're getting at.
Yeah, it's a choice. It makes it easier, you know. It's a comfort device.
Right.
And it still runs and everything all these years later, so I might as well use it.
Yeah. If you're not going to put it on eBay, get some good out of it.
Oh, I get good out of it, that's for sure. But anyway, I'm sitting here at the north door. I got a static view on my Skype page with a video camera looking at the east door.
So that's the view eastward?
Yeah, you can see the pomegranate bush tree, whatever.
Oh, is that what that is?
And the big, tall, green, lush pasture behind is almost ready for baling.
And what are the hills in the back sort of right?
Those are foothills. You can't see. There's a behind that pomegranate tree. There's two humps called Tuscan Butte, and they got TV towers on them. But then to the right of that, if I had a long enough cord, I could show you Mount Lassen, but I don't.
Oh,
to the
wow.
right of the that is. Mount Lassen. I can see it from the north door, but I can't see it from the east door at all.
Well, it looks like a pretty day out there.
Oh yeah, I've been bird watching.
Well, it is.
Robin cruising around, a couple magpies, buzzard flies through every once in a while, but it's peaceful.
It's been more or less rainy all day long, and it's going to be, according to the forecast I'm looking at. We're looking at rain all day tomorrow and rain all day Sunday and rain all next week. And the day that, if it works out that I go to attend the funeral, the day we drive out of here, thunderstorms and thunderstorms the day after. So, yeah.
Well, it looks like we're into our summertime blues here, blue skies and hot weather.
Hmm.
I think it's 82 due today.
Well, it's a comfortable 73 here inside the fabulous studio. On the outside, it's 1 degree different. It's 72 outside. Well, I noticed that I see Tracy's icon down there. Is she actually in the conversation?
I just added
her. Yes, I am.
Golly Moses, it's good to hear from you. We were beginning to worry.
I know. I've just been kind of It's just so, it's so horrible to turn on the news. And then the only main reason why I called in today was to the shows for the last couple of weeks. But main reason why I'm listening today is just to hear what you were going to talk about Giuliani. It's just like, I'm just crazed because I'm like going, what in the world is this man doing? And then to hear, you know, the Tangerine Tiberius say,
"Yeah, you dropped out there for a minute." To hear Tangerine Tiberius say what?
To say he just Rudy's a good guy. He just needs to get his facts straight. In other words, he needs to get the lie right. Is that?
Yeah, he hasn't been. He has not been brought up to speed on the lie of the day.
Right.
Because remember, out of the Carotene Caligula's own mouth, he said, "I didn't know anything about the payment to that." You know what? This occurs to me, Tracy. Maybe this is it. Instead of doing the stupid Trump voice, maybe if we started saying the things that Donald Trump said, but we only said it in the Bill Clinton voice, maybe then the Republicans would
right.
notice. So let's see. Let me try this. Wait a minute.
Something.
Yeah. Let's see. Let me see if I can channel Bill real quick.
I did not know anything about the payment to Miss Daniels. I didn't know. You'll have to talk to my lawyer, Michael Cohen. Michael knows all about it. Now, see, if we do that, oh, my God, they're liable to have, Republicans are liable to start spontaneously having babies.
Exactly. I mean, between that and, you know, the whole Michelle Wolf thing about, you know, them going on and on about how horrible she was to Sarah Huckabee, you know, Huckabee, when the only thing she brought out was the fact that she's a lying person. You know what I'm going to say. But, I'm going to try to be nice, but she's a liar. I love what she said about the smoky eye. She takes facts and turns them into ash and makes the perfect smoky eye. Now, did she? I don't hear anything in that where she disparaged Sarah Huckabee's appearance. Did you hear that?
Not a word. But you know that.
Not a word.
Those twee precious members of the for-profit media sort of gave themselves away in that moment. Whether it was Mrs. Greenspan. Or whether it was Mika, and I hate to say it, but even Stephanie Ruhle, whom I kind of like, and I thought would be a little bit better and a little bit smarter than to say something that stupid. But maybe she was following orders. Maybe Mrs. Greenspan is the grand doyenne of women at NBC, and everybody has to follow her lead. I don't know. But I still maintain that Mika got pissed off because she was actually, and nobody talks about this, she was included in Michelle Wolf's comments.
Yes, and she was. Now, if anybody should be pissed off, I mean, what does she say about when Me Too works out?
Yeah, she said congratulations on their to Joe and Mika on their engagement, or as it's as it's otherwise known, a Me Too that worked out. Jesus, that was scathing.
I felt that burn. I felt that burn.
Oh, I know that. Yeah, there was radiant heat coming off of that thing.
That was a burn. And she now, and that's what I'm saying now. If it was me and somebody said something like that about me, I would have said something or at least commented on it. But for her to go again, like you said, she didn't say anything about her, about that burn. I mean, and it was, like you said, it was radioactive. And then she you know, she owes her an apology. And Sarah Huckabee owes the United States of America an apology for being the lying sack of shit that she is.
And
anybody's owed an apology is us.
And, you know, she's been caught in another one, and a couple of members of the White House press corps, Tracy, have caught on now because the business with Giuliani and saying what he said, she was then asked, so were you lying back when you said he didn't know anything about it, Trump? Or are you lying now, or did you have bad information, or what? And the answer
was... Exactly.
Yeah, the answer was... Well, I'm not privy to those lawyering kind of talkings. So I was just doing the best I could. I ain't going to bake you no more pecan pies. I'm not. Especially not the ones I bake by going to Kroger's and buying one.
Exactly. Or to Walmart buying the Pan LaBelle
Super Pan. Yeah, Sarah does seem kind of Walmart-y, doesn't she? Yeah, she's not one of those Kroger private selection. No.
It's like every morning. God. Do they have...
Is Tracy cutting out?
Yeah, losing Tracy a little bit there. Yeah, by the way, note coming in, and I've got a cowbell for this, regarding Sarah Hasselbeck sandbags. Matt in San Francisco says...
To me, it seems like it would be beneath her to do so.
Matt in San Francisco says, I do feel bad for Sarah. I appreciate a woman you can look in the eye from either side. More cowbell. From either side. That's very good, Matt. I needed the giggle badly.
Cowbell.
So, are Tracy, are you on the road? Are you out driving today, or are you stationary?
She must be driving, Bob.
Yeah, I'm guessing, because she kind of came in and went out. Hopefully, her signal will improve.
Oh, and Bob, I am so sorry to hear. Yeah, I am on my way home. I'm in the car trying to figure out what the hell I'm going to make for dinner tonight, because I just don't have. It's so crazy. I used to have, like, all these ideas about dinner. But lately, I have been so feeling like such, horrible that I just haven't really felt like doing much of anything. And I don't know what it is. Maybe my meds aren't right or whatever, but it's just, I just haven't really cared.
I'm not a doctor and I don't play one on the radio or nothing, Tracy, but I don't think it's your meds.
I just think it's the general, the atmosphere that we're living in.
Yes. I mean, me over here, I mean, I don't have any meds to blame or anything. And, just staring in sober, wide-eyed horror at the awesome majesty of the madness, it takes a toll.
It does. It sucks the life out of you. I mean, it's been so hard. I have been so joyless lately, and that's not me, but it's just, getting the energy to do anything. And it's, my whole life lately has consisted of getting up, going to work, coming home and watching television. And that's about it. I don't go out anymore. I am going to go see the Avengers on Sunday.
Okay.
And
good.
I've been watching all of the Avengers, all of the Marvel comic movies in order, and I'm up to Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm almost finished with Guardians of the Galaxy.
The first one?
Nexus 8. Yeah, the first one. And now the next one is Age of Ultron or whatever. So,
that's pretty neat. Committing to watching them in order. Does it make more sense that way?
Yes, it does. Because, see, it's been hell. It's been 10 years since, Iron Man came out. And watching the movies in the orders that they were released, now I didn't remember most of that shit. And so watching them and then knowing about the Easter eggs and the MacGuffin, you know what a MacGuffin is?
Yes.
I did not know. What a MacGuffin was, because I kept reading all these articles and I kept talking about the MacGuffin, and I'm like, what the fuck is a MacGuffin? And so I'm like, is that a new sandwich at McDonald's? What the hell, So
not
I'm
McDonald's,
like,
please, not McDonald's.
I'm sorry. And so I'm like, what the hell, what the hell is a MacGuffin? And so then I read about the MacGuffins, and that makes sense. And so then I'm seeing all the MacGuffins in all the Marvel movies, and and I'm like, okay. But no, it's so cool watching it on my TV, because I have a 65 or 60-inch 4K Ultra HD TV.
God, that's like having them in the room with you.
Yes, it is. So, like I said, I've been, I'm almost done, because I'm going to probably binge them tonight and tomorrow, because Alex and I are supposed to see it Sunday. Or we might just wait until Tuesday, because since I'm a member of AMC Stubbs, on Tuesdays, the movies are $5.
Ooh, I'd wait till Tuesday for that.
I told Alex, he's like, well, why don't, I said, Alex, let's just go on a Tuesday, $5, and then I get discounts on popcorn and all sorts of stuff.
Well,
yeah,
I'm just curious, I messengered you some food porn.
You did?
A few days back on, over on, the Facebook Messenger thing. And, I never saw that you got it or anything, but I was.
Oh, here it is. Look, ooh, look at that. Are those wings?
The wings and ribs. Yeah.
My God, how did they turn out?
Oh, they were magnificent. I mean, they didn't really need any sauce, but we sauced them anyway.
Well, I did some food porn. I did, well, Jen and I, it was a joint effort. We did what she calls chili tacos, and she makes chili, like a chili salt, chili, you know, instead of, you know, ground beef, but it's chili. And we do them, and we put that in taco shells and deep fry the taco shells with the cheese. And that's what we had for dinner last night. And now it sounds terrible. I can't believe I did this because, like I said, I haven't really been really adventurous in the kitchen in a while. But she bought rice-a-roni Spanish rice. And you have to add diced tomatoes in it. And it was the diced, and just so happens I had a can of diced tomatoes with the chili, you know, that you use for chili beans or whatever.
Yeah.
And it tasted just like you were at a Mexican restaurant. I could not believe how. And then we did, you know, I did refried beans that I did myself.
Ooh.
But yeah, with onions and.
When you make refritos homemade, nothing like them.
Nothing like it. I mean, I that was like the most adventurous I've been in a while. I just got to get my mojo back, man. I don't know, man. It's just with everything that's been going on. It's just hard for me to laugh. Now I did laugh at something the other day. I know it's probably really old. What's the stupid Nancy? There's so many to choose from. What's his name? Spencer.
Oh, Richard Spencer. Yes.
Richard Spencer. And I guess there was a point where somebody ran up on them and sucked the shit out of them.
Yeah, that was the day of the inauguration.
Okay. That, and they put it, what did they, to music. And so when I first, because I had never seen it. And when I saw that, and, you know, they had it to music.
It's an uplifting moment seeing a Nazi get punched, I admit.
Yes, it is. It was definitely an uplifting.
And there's a history of it.
I don't condone violence.
Neither do I, but you know what? In that first Indiana Jones movie, when he's getting the shit kicked out of him by the big burly Nazi, and he backs him into the spinning propeller blade, is there anybody in the theater that goes, "Oh, the poor Nazi"?
No, there's nobody upset about that at all. So, and I think a few people actually cheered. So, you know, when you're getting, you know, when stuff like that happens, you can't help but cheer because he's a prick. And I guess he's, you know, is he being sued or something's happening that he has a GoFundMe page?
Oh, well, all his funding's dried up because all of a sudden the organizations were made aware of the fact that he was a Nazi and they decided they didn't want to have anything to do with Nazis. And he ran through all of the funding opportunities. And then finally, a little right-wing turd, who had access to a lot of money, an heir, I believe, to the Mellon family fortune. You might recall Richard Mellon Scaife was involved in funding the great Cleanus Hunt of the 1990s. One of the Mellon heirs set up a Nazi funding site, and then oopsie, killed himself.
Oh, whoa!
And that was Richard Spencer's last friend on Earth.
Oh, damn! Poor baby.
I can hear the grief, even at this great distance, in your voice, Tracy.
If you could see me, I'm playing that the world's smallest violin.
Yes. there was one thing I got. Todd and I have been talking about it a little bit. And it's on my list if I can ever get free of things like massive car repair bills and so forth.
Yeah, I saw that. $1,500?
Yeah, it hurt real bad. And more to go. More to go. I've got to get a housing for the passenger side headlight because something went haywire with the bulb and the back of the housing melted. So brand new, one of those is $642. I had no idea.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm gonna be haunting some junkyards and seeing if I can find something there.
I hope so.
But if I can
ever. What year is your car?
2011.
should be. I mean, that's 7 years old. You should be able to find something.
I'm hoping so. It's just gonna. I'm gonna have to drill down and try to.
Ooh, that, and I did the math. Ooh.
Yeah. Yes, you did. Yes, you did. See, see, you're not near as bad a shape as you thought you were, Tracy.
I did the math. I did it just that quickly, too. I'm so proud of myself.
Hillbilly math made easy. Absolutely. But if
Speaking
I can,
of hillbilly.
Well, wait. If I can ever, if I can ever fight my way clear, I just want you to know about this, because I think you're going to want one too. Well, first of all, the barbecue's all being done on that char griller, the acorn, and I'm in love with it. You know, for the $150 or so that Agnes spent getting that for me at on one of those yard sale listings, it's the best $150 she ever spent or we ever spent on anything having to do with cooking outside with fire.
Yeah, I saw the joy on your in your face on one of those pictures when you were cooking something. I saw tears of joy. I saw it.
And I'll probably be firing it up again this weekend because, you know, when you go to a funeral, you got to take food.
Yeah.
So my aunt and uncle both loved pulled pork, so I figure I'll probably do up the three butts and wrap them up real tight and everything and carry them over in a cooler. But there's this other thing out there that I wanted to make you aware of if you weren't already. A propane griddle. There's one by Blackstone and there's one by Blue Rhino. And they're they're 3 feet wide by like 2.5 feet deep. And you can do all that Japanese teppanyaki table with the steak and the zucchini and the onions and the fried rice and everything right there outside. And ooh, I've got a mad Jones on to own one of those.
And how much of those things would that thing set you back?
$300.
That's not terrible.
No, and they look like they're well made. I think the Blue Rhino one is better made than the Blackstone one, because it's got a sheet metal cover that folds over and latches down to cover the griddle when it's not in use. And then when you go to use it, you fold it open, and you've got side tables to either side of the griddle, so you can put your fried rice and your eggs and all your stuff, and to do all of your pancakes and sausage and bacon on a Sunday morning. Yeah, who wouldn't love that?
Well, we had bratwurst the other day. That was, you know, sit on the grill and stuff. Because, like I said, I haven't really been doing much of anything besides sitting on the couch and being alone. But speaking of food and hillbillies,
yes.
Guess what I watched the other day?
Oh,
what? You talked to Anthony Bourdain.
Oh, the Bourdain episode, yeah.
And you know what? That was, I'm loath to admit it, but that was actually the first time I've ever watched that show.
Really?
Ever. Never. I mean, not that I've never had, I just never, you know, I never think about it. And then when you did pulled out the tweet about it, I'm like, okay, I'm going to go ahead. You know, I watched it just by chance. I watched it a couple of days ago. And it was incredibly fascinating. I felt like I was an anthropologist watching that show. Because it gave me an insight on people that, you know, other than, you know, listening to your stories, I have no idea what it's like, you know, being a hillbilly or living in West Virginia is like. I have no clue. But to watch him, you know, with all these people, you know, with my particular favorite was watching him eating squirrel. I don't know if I could do that.
Squirrel's, squirrel's tasty. It really is. I'm not kidding. And the old, you know, there's still some old timers left who consider it the height of delicacies to have a big old plate of squirrel brains and eggs.
I'm sorry, did I gas?
That's okay. I don't eat them either. But squirrel generally, yeah, it's pretty good.
Well, it was just like I said, it was just watching. What amazed me was how, you know, we were talking about the interracial families and all that, and to see, because when I, you know me, and most people that don't live, you know, people on the West Coast, and like even he said on, you know, the East Coast, we have, you know, it's locked and loaded on what we think people from West Virginia are going to be like. And it just goes to show that everybody is just like everybody else. And that people, they're just trying to survive. They're just trying to take care of their families. Still a little bit too much with the guns, you know. But it was funny when he was shooting. He's like, okay, I hate to admit this, but most people just like to see stuff blow up. And, you know, it was fascinating to me. I mean, I told you, like, my sister, you know, who in a million years never would I have thought she would ever hold a gun, but her husband, you know, has guns and she owns a gun. She has a concealed weapon permit. And she talks about her gun like it's, you know, she does, and she carries it with her because it's legal in Oregon. But then I think about the story that you talked about the woman that was put in jail for 2 years for standing her ground and her gun wasn't even loaded. I think what would happen if my sister was put in the same situation.
Oh, there's definitely a double standard out there, Tracy. But I don't, you know, I have to tell you or anybody else in the Horn Family Community Congregation, but there's definitely a double standard.
You know, this woman is going to have to spend 2 years in jail for, like you said, standing her ground and protecting herself.
And pregnant. Don't leave out the pregnant part.
You know. Pregnant. Now, was the person that she, you know, was brandishing the gun at, was that person black or white?
I'll beg your forgiveness in advance. Her name is Chanel Harvey, and it's pronounced and it's spelled Chanelle. I'm going to engage in a little bit of bias and guess that she was black.
Right.
I mean, is that okay?
And,
I mean, I'm not trying to be a jerk here.
No, because quote unquote victim's name, you know, that ran to the cops scared, you know, because there has to be a story behind that. There, you know, what transpired before? Did they have, was there an altercation? Was it you're fucking with my man and I'm coming after you kind of shit, you know? Because I'm like, what prompted this person to, you know, come after a pregnant woman and her family? But does any of that discuss? No.
You know, you could go over to Vox and read the whole story and maybe get more of the details, but the bare bones of it is that she was afraid that she and her mama and her child and her fetus were about to be run over because this woman was repeatedly, you know, backing up and carrying on and being a fool. And that's when she pointed the unloaded gun at her.
You know, and I think about the things that I would do, something that I would, I'm not, you know, because I'm a convicted felon, so I can't have a gun, which is a good thing.
Well, I think that's part of what played into it, because one of the charges was assault, the other charge was felon in possession of a firearm.
Well, that was, you know, again, see that, and I thought about, and that's one of the things that I thought about, too, is like, what would happen now? Heaven forbid, Jan and Allison and I are at home. We have a, you know, for some fool reason, we would have a gun in the house. And somebody came into the house and, you know, broke in or tried to attack us or whatever the case may be. And then I picked up the gun. Not Alex, not Jan, but me. Trying to protect myself in my home. Now, I don't own the gun, but if I, you know.
Sure possessing it in that moment.
Right, I'm damn sure gonna possess it because somebody's breaking into my
house. And what are you supposed to do? Go and look for some other implement?
Exactly.
But the thing is, she had a concealed carry permit.
Wait a second. So how if she's a felon in possession of, how's she get a concealed carry permit?
That's where I can't make it make sense. felony firearm convictions.
Because if you got a concealed weapon carry permit, they have to do a background check, yes?
You would think.
So, stands to reason that she shouldn't have been able to get a concealed carry permit if she's a convicted felon.
You would think not.
She just had an asshole for a judge. Speaking of asshole judges, who is this idiot? What was this? In the Southern District. Oh, God. What is his name? He's a Trump nominee for the federal court for Mississippi, Texas. And basically his record for people of color, LGBTQ people, just abysmal. And of course, Trump wants him to be, a judge. Oh God, why? I hate it when I have all these things that I've read over the last week or so, and I'm just like, my memory sucks. But anyway, I can't think of his name, but what about what's happening in Oklahoma about the Ten Commandments?
I don't know.
And you haven't heard about that?
Maybe, I don't think.
That they're trying to say that the Ten Commandments is a historical document.
Oh, they all do. They all try that.
And I'm like, and see, because, I'm not the smartest person in the world. But if, because they're trying to say it's like a historical document, like, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and woo 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 woo. Well, wouldn't you actually have to have the documents?
Well, you'd have to prove the provenance of it. That's kind of what I was talking about a little bit last night about the interpretive signage for an Indian mound here in West Virginia, and it shows along the way other things, like Sparta, the building of the Colosseum, and there's this one dot that says Jesus. And Jesus is someone you believe in.
Exactly.
There's no way to factually, historically prove the existence of the Jesus of the Bible.
Nope.
To the same extent that, you can't factually, historically prove that a cobra rose up behind Siddhartha Gautama and gave the Buddha shade from the sun.
Nope.
There might have been a guy named Siddhartha Gautama. And there might have been a guy named Yeshua Bar Yusuf. But that's as far as you can go.
Exactly. And I'm a Christian.
No, I understand. And I say that not trying to step on anybody's toes.
No. But that's what I'm saying. I believe. But that doesn't make it, just because I believe in it doesn't make it historically correct. Or provable. You cannot prove the existence of Jesus. No. You can't prove the existence of...
And you damn sure can't produce actual evidence of stone tablets with admonitions carved into them by the finger of God.
Hell no. And when I heard that, I'm like, what the entire fuck?
Oh, I've got a little more detail for you from... the story of Sawatu Salama Ra. At the age of 15, she was speaking to people on college campuses about the need to address the climate crisis.
Wow.
Okay, so she's an activist, she's well-spoken, she had followed the law in getting her concealed carry permit. And by the way, now that she's in prison and pregnant... They shackle her to the bed when they perform a vaginal exam on her in the course of her pregnancy.
Violation.
How is it anything but? According to her lawyer, she's not getting proper medical care, even though her pregnancy is is deemed high risk? I mean, this is sickening. And yeah, it turns out the background on it was a domestic altercation. Her niece and another child at school don't get along. And Chanel Harvey brought the child over for a sleepover. And somebody called and said, "Nuh-uh, this is not going to work. Come get the kid." And so that's when she came over. And the altercation started.
Nice. She's in jail over a sleepover.
Gone bad. Yeah.
Gone bad. Well, you know, I mean,
her mother is an organizing manager for the Sierra Club.
Are you serious?
Yeah. When she was 19 years old, she took on polluters like the Marathon Oil Refinery and the Detroit Renewable Power Trash Incinerator. As co-director of the East Michigan Environmental Council, she planned an environmental justice conference to bring folks from around the country to Detroit. And that conference will take place without her because she's busy being in jail.
Yeah, And like Michelle Wolf said at the end of her monologue, and Flint still has dirty water.
Flint still doesn't have clean water, exactly. And one more thing, there's a fucked up rule in the Detroit Police Department that says whoever gets to the police station first is deemed to be the victim. You know, without regard to actually investigating. So Chanel Harvey got there first, so she gets to the victim.
So,
and Sawadhu Salama Ra is defaulted to perpetrator status.
Because it probably never even dawned on her to even go to the police, because she figured it was handled. I mean, it's like, Okay, I'm gonna bust. Either you get out of my face, or I'm gonna bust a cap in your ass. Even though the gun wasn't loaded, but she didn't know that.
And so apparently there was a bizarre job done on her in terms of how the jury was instructed and how the case was presented. Man, the cops wanted this case, but it's obvious. It's obviously a wild miscarriage of justice. Let me check in, since we just brought up legal stuff. Let me check in with Billable Rick. And let me mention, we got $5 to go and 35 minutes to get there. We got $5 to go to finish off Darlene's challenge, and we've got $160 to go to finish off fundraising for the first week of May. So if we could do that in the next 35 minutes, that would be freaking awesome, especially the $5 part, so we'll meet the challenge. Billable Rick, what's happening, man? Rick? Earth to Rick?
Yo, Rick.
Okay, maybe he's, maybe they're having another birthday celebration in the office today. Or maybe his headset isn't working. I don't know.
Be off to billable things.
Yeah, it could be a billable moment. Larry's with us from over Berkeley way. Are you in the room, Larry?
Yeah, I'm here.
Ah, good.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm okay. My dad's having a birthday on Sunday.
Well, happy birthday to your dad.
3. So I'm a little excited about that. I hope he has a good time. They're planning a party for him. What else is happening? I'm just going to school and I'm on the chat. You know, the chat with Carol Abel or Carol,
yeah,
Carol Fricker. and they're discussing Korea and discussing deep state stuff and national security stuff and foreign policy.
Oh, the the derp state.
I'm following that. So, you know, that's what they're doing. And I guess I sort of know what's happening. The news would concentrate on more on what legislation is happening, what the Congress is doing, because while we're spending all this time talking about the scandals of Trump and whatever, they're busy either doing something to ruin the country or worse. So, and other than that, I'm just going to school and taking my class and you know, trying to keep my head above water. And thank heavens Mercedes is over here and helping me out, which is she's a blessing.
Well, how is I got to ask you, how's algebra treating you?
I'm still working with it. The instructor says I'm going to pass, so I just need to work a little harder. But he said I'm going to pass, and so I'm okay with that. I guess I still don't understand what I'm doing, and I don't really understand why I'm doing it. But you know what Steve said last week? He said, "Larry, you're never going to use it." But so yeah, it's
yeah. But you might. You might.
You know. So I don't know, Chanel Harvey, and what's the story in Detroit? Where what happened? I missed something in the discussion with this woman. Chanel Harvey, what did she do, or what? Did
well, she,
do she
was or? She was said to be menacing another woman, a young woman of color, and the her name is Sawatu Salama Ra, and Sawatu pulled an unloaded pistol in order to attempt to defend herself in a stand your ground state. And is now doing 2 years hard time, and pregnant, and a situation that seems manifestly unjust.
Uh-huh. Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's that... But, you know, and as far as I'm concerned, the whole thing about Trump, he's a mess, it's a mess, and I don't really understand what all of his stuff has to do with with us or with the country or anything like that. It just seems that all that other stuff. Oh, and they're also talking, Carol and the other. So wringing their hands about how Russia keeps on coming up. And they don't really understand, you know, why Russia is. They feel that Russia is being used as a boogeyman. I don't know what y'all have to say about that, but and apparently Jill Stein they're going after Jill Stein. I don't know why, but.
Well, you know, if they subpoena Jill Stein to come to Washington, D.C., she'll get on a plane at Logan Airport and wind up in Seattle.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. That is Washington, after all, right?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, there's Rick.
Hey, how y'all doing?
There's Rick. How are you, Rick?
Hey, I'm doing great, Larry. I was going to say something about the Thomas Cooley Law School. Do you know who went there, Bob? And possibly at the same time as Cohen.
Who?
My former boss at the U.S. Attorney's Office. She was acting U.S. Attorney for but most of the last year before a president was appointed, or before Trump appointed a permanent U.S. Attorney. Her name is Sandra Brown.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Well, I know there's a judge whose last name is Beckley, I think. No relation to the city in West Virginia, I guess.
Right.
But she's some sort of a judge, and she's a graduate of Cooley. And what, a month and a half or so ago, she was asked to officiate at a wedding, and she decided that the groom looked insufficiently American.
Oh.
And so instead of officiating the wedding, she called the ICE on him.
Oh, geez.
Now, this guy was adopted into an American family and is and has legal status to be here. I think he was, you know, months old when he was adopted. And he got rousted on his wedding day because of this bigoted judge.
Oh, jeez.
And spent like 22 hours being harangued by immigration people instead of, you know, enjoying one of the most momentous days of his life.
Ah, jeez.
All based on the bigotry of one judge.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, my guess is that Sandra Brown was probably a graduate of Thomas Cooley Law School, let's say, I would venture about maybe 1988 or something like that. Class of 88. I think Cohen maybe was a couple of years after her. I don't know for sure. She's like mid-50s. Okay, she's my age, roughly, more or less. So, well, anyhow, I'll have to listen to the podcast to catch up on everything. It's good to see you, Tracy.
It's good to hear from you, too. I know I have been incognito.
Oh, wait a minute.
Oh, my God.
And that's, you know, that's what Matt and Humboldt was talking about yesterday. The little nuggets that just sort of happened during Friday on the Front Porch. Last week, it was Steve from Georgia Stan saying that when you're getting ready for a colonoscopy, you'll see bubblegum you chewed in 1982. that's still for the ages. It really, really is. And then Tracy with, I've been incognito. Yep.
Edith?
Yeah, because that, I mean, just, you know, bang, right there, you know, just right there, you know, into the, yeah.
Yeah, I have my moments. I do have my moments. Oh, how was your anniversary, Bob?
Oh, we had a lovely time. We had an absolutely lovely time. Just spent the day out in nature on what has been thus far the most beautiful day of 2018. And just sort of cherished each other's company and had awesome barbecue.
Yeah, that's because, you know, that's your anniversary is Alex's birthday, and he turned 30 on Tuesday. We're not going out until next week. We're going to Gladstone's, for his birth, because it's kind of combined, you know, his birthday and Mother's Day. So we're going to go to Gladstone's. But on his actual birthday, I made Janet cook the roast the night before. So the next day I did, you know, I made a hash, you know, with the roast and potatoes. And I was going to make, you know, and we did eggs, and I was going to make grits. And Alex was like, but can we have pancakes? So when I make my pancakes, I make them thin, kind of like crepes.
Yeah.
And so they were so, I used Crusty's pancake mix.
That stuff's so good.
Oh my God, Crusty's is so good. It is so good. But I like my pancakes thin, because nothing worse than eating a pancake that's too thick and it's not done in the middle and you're eating batter. Ugh. So I like to buy for his birthday dinner, roast beef hash, eggs, and pancakes. Yeah, that was fun. That was fun. I need to start barbecuing again. Okay, now you schooled me once before. The difference between barbecuing and grilling. Go.
Grilling is simply cooking meat over charcoal.
Okay.
Barbecuing is the process of creating barbecue, which is lengthy and low heat and, you know, a longer time, low heat, and often involves...
Slow and low, right?
Yeah, low and slow, and often involves brining or rubbing or resting with various and sundry seasons and, you know, flavor woods for smoke, like apple and cherry and hickory and pecan and so forth.
Gotcha.
And if you're out west, if you can get alder. I can't get it here, but alder is a beautiful flavoring wood.
Okay. There's a place in Chatsworth that sells barbecue wood. And I have to pass by there every day because of my new school run. So I'm going to go check it out now that it's, you know, been really pretty outside. It's got, you know, earlier this week it was really cold and, you know, it actually kind of rained. And now today it's 96 degrees right now. Rick, are you at work or are you at home?
Oh, no, I'm at work. It was when I was driving through the valley this afternoon, early this afternoon, it was like I saw 94. And then it's like 84, 85 right here on the west side. So it's cooler because we're 2 miles from, I can see the ocean from my office here.
Are you in Santa Monica?
Yeah, I can see Santa Monica. I'm in West LA, but very close to Santa Monica.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, I didn't know. I didn't know that Ventura Boulevard goes all the way out past Mulholland Drive. It goes into Hidden Hills.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it goes all over the place. Hey, I did something kind of fun this past week. I flew on an executive jet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was like
moving
a 30-seater.
Moving on up.
Yeah, well, it was actually the same price as Southwest Airlines. And this way you don't have to go through the TSA crap, you know, the security theater and all that shit. So, you know, the client was paying for it, so it was fine with me. I just had a deposition of an expert witness to defend up there in Oakland. And I was thinking of you, Larry, because when I was there, as I was walking on my way to the deposition ended at 4, my flight wasn't leaving until 7:30, so I had to burn some time. So I found this pool joint called the Ruby Room. It's like a basement bar and you can barely see things. It's like lit in like, you know, ruby colored light, you know. And there was a pool table there, ruby colored, of course. And but on the way there, there was like a May Day protest, which was pretty good. So I sort of watched a little bit of that. I guess a May Day march is what it was. And of course, the police overdid it. I mean, they just, you know, they had probably, you know, 10 times as many police as they needed, you know, like the overkill that they always tend to do with these kinds of things. And, you know, so I got an Uber and flew out then. So it was just a one-day trip. I didn't stay overnight, but I'm going to try a case. Looks like it's going to trial, Larry, from what I can see, May 29th and 30th. It depends. It's one of those court calls, like the 29th. There's going to be a bunch of cases on the calendar. And, you know, the cattle call, it's called. And the judge will either set it for trial later that day or the next day or whatever. I don't really know how it's going to work. But I suspect it will go forward. So that should be fun.
But it's in Oakland?
Yeah. Well, the deposition was in Oakland because the attorney for the state it works out of the state office building in Oakland. But the trial itself will be in San Francisco. But I'll probably fly into Oakland because I think it's easier to fly into Oakland Airport and then get to San Francisco than it is to go directly to San Francisco, because the airport there is like, I think it's like near San Mateo or whatever. It's not.
Yes, it's near Burlingame. It's way out of San Francisco. But when you get over there, if you do come up, you do have some time. Give me a call.
Yeah. Yeah, I was, you know, the view, you know, I had a view looking north towards Berkeley, and I actually saw the tower there that you guys have for your campus.
Yes, like, the Campanile.
The Campanile, yeah. So I thought of you when I saw that, Larry.
Yeah. Well, I live fairly close to the campus. But this last weekend, I forgot to mention that that there was a book festival this last weekend, and I went to see Robert Reich speak because he's promoting a new book.
Mm-hmm.
And also I went to some other things. Viv Albertine of the punk band The Slits was also interviewed by Grail Marcus. the guy that wrote Mystery Train and Bob Dylan stuff, and is also a prof. So I went to see her and met her and met him. And let me see. So, you know, I was busy this weekend, this last weekend, for the first time in a really long time. But I wish I had Brian up here to help me with my math.
Oh, yeah, he's doing pretty well in calculus. I asked him, you know, if he was doing homework. He said, no, I don't think I need to do it right now. So I think he's like getting to the point where he feels he's got a good base of knowledge and he's moving forward with that, you know, which is good. Again, I could never do calculus, and his grandfather on the on his mom's side taught, I think, mathematics at either, I think he went to Brown, but I think he taught at Princeton, if I'm not mistaken. Uh-huh. So he was very smart. You know, he was like a statistician for IBM and, you know, did forecasting for IBM, that kind of thing, using mathematical models. Calculus. What's that?
I cried in business calculus. It brought me to tears.
Yeah. You know, that's why I became a lawyer, Tracy, so I wouldn't have to worry about doing stuff like that, calculus.
Well, most of the math, you know, scientists, and I guess the most applied, you know, most applied mathematicians are engineers. So, mm-hmm. But I'm doing my best. My father is down at a new assisted living place on Ventura Boulevard called Belmont. And he just moved from the desert over near my brother and sister. So that's why I was asking about Ventura Boulevard.
Oh, okay.
But other than what I was just telling everybody, I'm not doing much. I think that, and we're just gonna, I think, you know, I'm trying to, you know, I'm just doing my best here, you know, that's all.
And that's all anybody can ask. It really is. Don't sell yourself short, Larry. It's about 16 minutes before the hour, and I have happy news to announce. Keith just finished off Darlene's challenge and got us started on the remaining 160 to go. So we got $155 to finish fundraising for the week, the first week of May, and be able to start next week with a clean slate. So thank you very kindly, Keith, and thank you to everybody who jumped in to knock down the challenge this evening. Thank you so very much indeed. And hopefully maybe in the next 15 minutes or so, we'll take a bite out of that 155. Meanwhile, note coming in from Scott and Punky, a subject line that says it all. Math, blech. Everything I know about advanced math could fit comfortably into a pocket protector with room left over for a protractor, a slide rule, two mechanical pencils, and Donald Trump's heart. Whoa. That's a lot of room, Scott. I think Rick sympathizes, and Larry, and well, I think everybody sympathizes for the most part. And I should probably give another Breaking Bad update. We're moving right through season two. And I really am. I'm amazed at the quality of the filmmaking. It's not what I expected at all. And it is, it's funny. It was Dr. John who said, you know, when you see it, you'll recognize what I mean when I say it's a tragedy. And it is. It's written like a Shakespearean tragedy. It's got music, song, comedy. But you know that something awful is on the way.
Yes.
No spoilers. Do not ruin this for me. I've got a lot of time invested in this.
Have you had?
I've watched it like two, three times now.
Yeah. If I recall, I think the bathtub scene was like midway in the first season. You've already done that, right, Bob?
Oh yeah.
Wasn't that gross? Oh.
I mean, there are shocking moments, but what's really surprising is the deft touch that the writers have for treating some really unsympathetic people with a surprising degree of multi-dimensional humanity.
Yeah. What are you watching?
Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Vince...
late to the party, Tracy.
Vince Gilligan is a freaking genius. I mean, that's his baby, Bob, as you know. He's one of the main writers. There's others as well, but I think he's the motivating force behind that show. As well as Better Call Saul. That's a good show.
Yeah,
too.
But you can't watch Better Call Saul until you've seen Breaking Bad.
Right. I just got to the part where we meet Saul for the first time.
Oh, okay. Has Gus come into the picture yet or not?
Yeah, see, don't do that.
Okay. Yeah. He's one of my favorite guys.
Yeah, mine too.
Yeah, he comes back in the Saul, Better Call Saul. So that's all I'll say.
Bob, you blew it.
Bob, Rick. Better Call Saul is a prequel to Breaking Bad.
Okay, well, yeah.
folks, I
he doesn't know about them.
Stop that.
Okay.
No, not you, Larry.
Bob, I have a question. I get calls from, and I also get emails from political action committees and public interest groups asking me to sign petitions and also asking me to donate money. And I also get calls from various groups, whether they like be the Police Action League, or I just got a call just now from the Breast Cancer Coalition or whatever, asking for money so that they can go do legislation and stuff. I don't know, I know that these places are legitimate, but I feel like, you know, if I'm signing a petition, do the petitions really make a difference? And does the money really make a difference for these people? You know,
once you give out your email address, it's out there for everybody.
Well, there's that, but as to the substance of your question, and yeah, that's the other thing. You give one your email address, and they will sell it or share it, and that's how you wind up on all these other lists. Sparky's absolutely right. Secondarily, you know, if a petition is going to be presented to some aspect of government, then you can make a compelling argument for signing it if you are one of the affected people. But if it's a sign this petition now to save the Venezuelan Vestal Virgins, then they're just data. It's just data harvesting, and they're just trying to fertilize their fundraising fields. I've pointed it out in the past, and you know, I guess I'm not on the Christmas card list or anything, but. When you look at these really huge organizations, and this is why I try to make sure that my time, effort, and money goes to grassroots organizations. Because the big overarching organizations are notorious for exploiting the grassroots and doing nothing for them. God only knows how many millions of dollars in donor monies have been raised on the backs of hillbillies for organizations whose executive staff is yanking down, you know, sometimes as much as $250,000 a year. But then you open your email and you find, send us $15 right now and we'll send you a canvas messenger bag just like the one that John Muir carried into Hetch Hetchy oh so many years ago, except our canvas messenger bag will be made by some little poor 9-year-old Chinese child chained to a table in Guangdong province. And if you take long enough to examine that, you'll realize that it's going to take a whole lot of $15 in order to pay the annual salary of a top-heavy staff of people making six-digit money. See, just because these humongous organizations are designated charitable, and Rick might have some further insight on this, does not mean they're not in the business of making a profit. Okay, like a not-for-profit hospital can still have a hospital administrator who's pulling down $2 million a year or something equally nuts.
Well, some of these groups are like MoveOn.org. I get End Citizens United. I get stuff from Action Network. I get stuff from these kinds of organizations that you might think are really good groups that are trying to and also for net neutrality, like Free Press and groups that are trying to support net neutrality. And I get mail every day or every couple days. Will you sign this, Larry? Something with Robert Reich's name on it. Are you with us, Larry? Larry, please sign this. Have you signed, or something from Brigade, some group that...
And then when you sign it, then you are on their list for being touched to contribute. And look, this is a little bit uncomfortable for me because we're running a radio network here and have for years that doesn't have any advertising, that doesn't have any corporate backing or sponsorship or anything like that, and it's driven entirely by the people who want the thing to continue. So, I understand that, and I talk about donations a lot more than I like to. But in this instance, there are no six-figure salaries. There are no Maybachs. There are no Gulfstream 5s. There are no, lovely homes in the country.
Yeah.
We're just trying to keep this thing going on the last frayed thread of a dry-rotted sneaker shoestring.
Yes.
And so, I mean, there's a little bit of difference in all of that.
Okay.
But there is a corporate executive structure, and there are people in college right now who are learning how to do this. I mean, there are people out there who get degrees, Larry, in nonprofit management.
Yes.
And there are seminars for getting your donors to write your organization into their will.
Yes, and I've got KPFA or Pacifica out here, and every 3 months, they are hard selling to try to get the same donor base to give them money every 3 months. Now, I go to book signings or what have you, and I will buy books, or I'll go to see an author. And by the way, Yanis Varoufakis is coming to the Bay Area, and Naomi Prince and Michael Eric Dyson, some of these people are coming out to the Bay Area because they know they have an audience, and KPFA knows they can fill a room with people, and people will buy whatever book they're hawking, just like at the Bay Area Book Festival with all these authors. But, I just don't, if I don't got it to give, I don't,
Right, and that's, that's the difference with what we do over here, Larry. I repeatedly tell people, don't hurt yourself. Do not do anything that would endanger your well-being. And we'll muddle on as best we can. And I need to thank, by the way, since we're running out of time here, I need to thank Brian. Thank you very kindly, Brian. Brian just took us down to only $120 to go to finish the week. Thank you, Brian, so very, very, very much. And the thanks are genuine because I recognize this doesn't happen at all without people to support it, and I recognize that the only reason it is supported is because people get some worth out of the little community that you all have built here, and that's a deeply humbling experience. And I often wonder if the six-figure nonprofit management class does sit around and think about those things. I honestly don't know. But it's a, it's an industry, Larry. It's an industry. We are at the top of the hour, and like I said, I want to encourage anyone and everyone to tune in and check out the Malloy program here in about an hour. I'll be sitting in for Mike. He's, you know, you don't just get over back surgery and get up and start dancing the lead from Swan Lake a day after. And so Mike is recovering and getting better. And I got a note from Kathy just saying, hey, could you do this evening? I said, yeah. And so I'm happy to, and I consider them dear friends, and Mike is a mentor. And, it's a friendship that I've cherished for a very long time, so I'm looking forward to that in about an hour. A reminder, if you want to listen, please don't listen on the Horn stream unless you absolutely have to. Please listen over at Progressive Voices. The Progressive Voices is easy to get on the TuneIn app, it's always fun to see when Mike's numbers rocket up toward the top of the trending list on TuneIn. I love that, and I appreciate you guys for making that happen. So thanks, everybody. Thanks for a wonderful week. Thanks for getting us as close as we are to finishing off the fundraising for the first week of May. Maybe we'll knock down that $120 before Monday. It would be awfully helpful if we did. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you this evening to Sparky, as ever, for moderating the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa for HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks always go out to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.